Let us face you. Surprising, huh? Look how many people and how spacious it is. Nice. Okay. I thought of a nice topic this evening. Want to teach you what a term in Vaishnava literature means that you may or may not have heard before, and give an example of it. I'm sure there are other acharyas that have used this term, but Jiva Goswami is one of them. And the term is Mahavakya. Mahavakya. What does Vakya mean?
Statement.
Like Vacha. Vakya is a statement. Mahavakya is a big statement. Or the principal utterance of an entire scripture. Some of you are familiar with Nectar of Devotion. It's Prabhupada's translation, a summary study of a book by Rupa Goswami entitled Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or the ocean of the nectar of devotion. And Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu has a Mahavakya. What a Mahavakya is in relation to a composition is that it summarizes the message of the entire scripture, the entire text. Generally, it comes towards the beginning, not like literally right at the very beginning, but towards the beginning of the composition. And anything that follows after that is to be understood in terms of this guiding principle upon which the whole rest of the scripture is based, and this rest of the scripture is expanding this statement, Mahavakya. So an example from Nectar of Devotion, the principal utterance of Nectar of Devotion, is Rupa Goswami's one verse definition of devotional service, bhakti. He says that bhakti is pure. And so to describe it in reverse, what bhakti isn't is impure. Anya abhilashata shunyam. Abhilas means desire, a hankering, something, you want something. Abhilash. Anya abhilash shunyam. No other desire. What are the other types of desires? Jnana, karma, janavratam. They're fruit of activities and mental speculation, don't have a place in bhakti. So that's what it isn't. And what is it? Anukulyena krishnanushilana bhaktir uttama. Bhakti is actually uttam bhakti. It's pure. And it's the following very carefully the example established by perfected souls. Anukulyena krishna anushilana. Follow. Anu means follow. Shilana means, shila means behavior or conduct. Taking up those activities which are following the pure devotees of Krishna. Cultivating like that, leaving aside all fruit of activities and mental speculation. And the whole rest of Nectar Devotions, long text, that's the that verse is the basis and support of the whole text. It's expanding upon that understanding. So Jiva Goswami says that in Srimad Bhagavatam there is also a Mahavakya. It meets the same standards. It summarizes the message of the entire text. All other understandings that follow that must, you know, if you have a problem understanding them, refer back to that principal utterance, because there it's just reflecting the light of that principal utterance or expanding upon the meaning of that principal utterance. And generally, as in Srimad Bhagavatam, or as in other cases, so also in Srimad Bhagavatam, it comes towards the beginning. Yesterday evening, I started going down this little PowerPoint presentation on the summary of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And I thought we wouldn't have enough space to continue with it here, but we have so much space. It's so spacious. So I was just going to explain instead of show. But it's in the first canto, this principal utterance. And the verse is first canto, chapter 3, text 28. Chapter 3 of canto 1 is a list, a summary of the incarnations of the Lord. Because in the first chapter there was six questions. One of the questions that the sages were asking Suta Goswami. Remember that picture from yesterday? Suta Goswami sitting up in this elevated seat and all the sages in front of him in the big forest, and Shaunaka Rishi with his big, a very learned son of Bhrigu, great sage, sitting before Suta, hearing, because Suta heard from Shukadeva Goswami and he assimilated his message, and so he wants to hear from him. Very eager. And one of the questions is, can you please describe the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world? And so he does. And there's a list, some number of them, not an exhaustive list. He says, in the course of listing them, he said, actually there's as many incarnations of the Lord in this world as there are waves in the ocean. So how many waves are there in the ocean? So many you can't count them. This, it's maybe finite, but still you can't count them all. There's so many. And then you count them all, then there's more. So, do you have a printer here in your house? SB 1.3.28. Just print it out. So, after saying there's so many, you can't count them all, there's this Mahavakya, where Sutta says, or Vyasadeva writes, that of all the incarnations that have been listed, and even the ones that haven't been listed, there's one amongst them all that's the source of them all. And that one that's the source of them all is Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. And that's the principal utterance of Srimad Bhagavatam. Famous verse, Ete Changsa Kalapung San Krishnas Tu Bhagavan Swayam Indrari Vyakulam Lokam Mridayanti Yuge 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 Yuge, just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. He comes from time, Dharmasya. No. When there is Dharmasya Glani, when there is discrepancy in religion, he comes from trying to remember, there's two verses. Pritranaya sadhanam vinyashaya to duskritam dharma sangh sapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So for those three reasons, Krishna comes yuge yuge from time to time or in various ages. So Krishna also, he sends forth expansions of himself to come into this world as avatars of the Lord. So the question was, describe those forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. So he's done that. Now he's saying, this is the bonus, he's saying there's one amongst them all that's the source of them all. There's a very nice, long, detailed purport, which I'm not going to read because it's so detailed. We're going to have the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur printed out just so you can see it's like 4 or 5 pages long on this verse because it's such an important verse. Where scriptural reference from Padma Purana and Vishnu Purana and various scriptures describe, just as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes in elaborate detail, I mean detail that you make your head spin, the varieties and categories of incarnations of the Lord. Swayam Prakash, Swayam Prabhav, Tadikatma Rupa, you know, different, like for example, the forms of the Lord where they are identical, like a category of expansions of Krishna is when Krishna performs rasa dance. The forms are identical. It's one Krishna with identical form. Or another example of that is Krishna expanding as 16,108 Krishnas in Dwaraka. And they're identical. Or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expanding in during the kirtan at Rath Yatra, where there were 7 kirtan parties, and each of the 7 kirtan parties felt that Lord Chaitanya was in their kirtan party alone. Not only that, that each of the kirtan performers in each kirtan party felt that Lord Chaitanya was simply looking upon them with such love and affection that his eyes couldn't leave that person. And each person was thinking the same. So that's a particular category of expansion. But then there's other categories of expansion. Just think of the Govardhan Leela, where Krishna had requested Nanda Maharaj to take all the paraphernalia for worship of Indra and instead worship Govardhan Hill. And one of our acharyas comments that Nanda Maharaj said, very nice, we'll take half and worship Govardhan Hill, the other half will worship Indra. And Krishna said, no, just worship Govardhan Hill. Okay, we'll just worship Govardhan Hill. So after worshipping Govardhan Hill, just to inspire the faith of the residents of Vraja, Krishna manifested this huge, gigantic form of Hari. And all the offerings he personally ate. When that giant form of Hari came, Krishna, little Krishna, came and offered his obeisances before Lord Hari. Was only himself. To show by example to all the residents of Braj, here's what you do when you see Lord Hari, you offer your obeisances. But not only that, the form of Govardhan is not different than Krishna also. 3 categorically different forms of the Lord in one leela. Pretty good. Very special. And certainly, you know, in terms of the Sanskrit terms that are identifying them, very, very different. So here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, translation of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this one verse. and it's 7 pages long, or 6 in a fraction. In it, there are quotes. I'll read a little bit there to help us appreciate how you can take this one verse and expand and expand and expand. So he quotes from first Laghu Bhagavatamrita, then Padma Purana, where he's describing various categories of incarnations. So one is Amsas, such as Matsya Kurma, etc. Kala, Kala, Kurma, Narada, as Avesh Avatar. So Narada is an incarnation. He is bearing the Lord's Bhakti Shakti. Wow. That's something. He's a living entity. We know that from his own story. In his previous life he was Jiva, little boy. But he became a empowered incarnation, bearing the Lord's own Bhakti Shakti. Or the four Kumaras. Which capacity of the Lord are the four Kumaras bearing? Jnana Shakti. Or Lord Brahma, the Lord's Srishti Shakti. Or Prithu as an incarnation. He's bearing the Lord's ruling potency, Palana Shakti, and so forth. So if there's scriptural, here's Laghu Bhagavatamrita being quoted. Exalted jivas, empowered by the Lord with portions of his powers, such as knowledge, are called avesha forms. Examples existing even in Vaikuntha are Shesha, Narada, and the Kumaras. Shesha is an interesting category of Shakti Vesha Avatar, because Ananta Shesh is not a jiva who is empowered, he's Vishnu Tattva, who is exhibiting a particular feature of the Lord's potency for manifesting whatever the Lord wants. He wants a bed, I'm his bed. He wants shoes, I'm his shoes. He wants an umbrella, I'm his umbrella. He wants a drinking vessel, I'm his drinking vessel. He just expands himself and manifests the paraphernalia of the Lord, which is non-different. Just like on our fiberglass drums, like that red fiberglass drum, they have the emblem on there, Balaram. Not there. When they started making them, Prabhupada explained, oh, it's a long story, but Balaram expands as Anantashesh. So Anantashesh is the paraphernalia, so the drum is worshipable because it's paraphernalia of the Lord, meant for his service. So when they were manufacturing these fiberglass drums, they called it Balaram because it's worshipable. As articles of worship on the altar, it's tadiya. It's worshipable. Those of you that have been to our Chicago temple and the three altars, Gornatai, Kishore Kishori, and Jagannath altar, in the front of the Jagannath altar, there's it looks like a Shila, right? You've seen in little singasana. It's tadiya. It's stone from a very ancient Nisringa temple. And they worship as one would worship a Shiva. And apply sandalwood paste and flowers and chant mantras because it's worshipable. In Padma Puran, here's some quote. The Supreme Lord, I'm not going to read the Sanskrit. The Supreme Lord invested his powers in the Kumaras and Narada. The Lord with four hands holding the conch and chakra entered into Prithu, O goddess. the activities of the great soul Parashuram, a Shakyavesh avatar of the Supreme Lord, holder of the bow, has been described. At the end of Kali Yuga, Vasudev enters into Kalki, a teacher of spiritual matters, and protects the world. Entering in Kali Yuga into those jivas who have previously appeared, the Lord carries out his desired activities. This is just translations. The Kumaras and Narada are invested with Shakti of Jnana and Bhakti, respectively. Prithu and others are invested with Kriya Shakti, or action. Some are invested with great powers, and others with little power. Included in the first type with great powers are the Kumaras and Narada. They are called avatars. Others with less power, such as Marichi and the Manus, are called Vibhutis. But he who was called by the 20th avatar, Krishna, is Bhagavan, not an Angsa. This is Padma Puran. So, details, especially those that are appreciate details, here it is. Sometimes you may be asked, or we are asked, why so much emphasis upon Krishna? There's an answer. One answer. Then, well, you know, what about other Vaishnava lines? They say all incarnations are incarnations of Vishnu. Or some say Narayan is the source of all incarnations. And you folks say Krishna. What's going on? How do I understand this? I don't want to get into a technical discussion, but a simple answer is, on the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, where the list that's given, when you go to chapter 3, the first avatars that are described are the Purusha avatars. And what are the Purusha avatars? Yeah. They're forms of Vishnu. Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Shiradakshaya Vishnu. And those three Vishnu forms are for a specific purpose, for the purpose of creation. So before you have forms of the Lord to descend within this world, you have to have the world. You have to have the cosmic manifestation. So their avatar function is bringing the creation into being. And then through those forms of Vishnu, some avatars appear. And then there's this Lila avatar, Shaktivesh avatar, Guna avatar, Manvantar avatar, Yuga avatar. There's six categories. And they're in detail described in the scriptures and listed for Sanatana Goswami by Lord Chaitanya. Found in Chaitanya Charitamrita, or teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and you can go read those detailed descriptions. So Krishna is in that list as an avatar of Vishnu. But then the statement is, Krishna is the source of all those avatars, including Vishnu. So we discussed this the other day, didn't we? You brought this up. That the statements found in the scriptures, Krishna is the Swayam, that's an important word, Swayam Bhagavan, the self-same, original personality of Godhead. He's not an expansion of someone. Rather, all are expansion of Him. What's the Vedanta, that the whole of Vedic wisdom is the search for the absolute truth. And the absolute truth has a very simple definition. That from which everything else comes. Janma Dhyasya Yataha. There it is in Vedanta Sutra statement. Janma Dhyasya Yataha. That from which everything else appears or has its janma, that which is the origin of all things and itself has no origin but is the origin of all things, that's the absolute truth. And any other truth is dependent upon that truth. And that is a relative. It may be truth, but it's a relative truth, relative to depending upon some other truth. That which has no other source of emanation, but itself is the emanating source of all other things, that's whatever that is, that's the absolute truth. So the statement of the Bhagavatam is, Krishna is that origin. He expands as his first expansion, Lord Balaram. Balaram expands as the first Sankarshan of the spiritual realm. Sankarshan then expands as the rest of the Chaturvyuha, Sankarshan, Pradumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudev. That original Sankarshan then expands as Lord Narayana Vaikuntha, who then expands the second quadruple expansion, or Chaturvyuha, or Sankarshan, Vasudev, Pradumna, and Aniruddha. And that second Sankarshan then expands as Vishnu forms, the Purusha avatars. Through those Purusha avatars, those forms of the Lord in Vaikuntha, they appear in this world. Which was the question that was asked. Please describe those forms of the Lord which exist in Vaikuntha, but they make their manifestation in this world. Can you describe them? He wants to hear that from Sutta. So he describes them, or lists them at least, and then volunteers. Of all of them, one of them is this original source. So some scriptures may say, a true statement, Vishnu is the source of the avatars, or through Vishnu the avatars appear in this world, which is true. Another statement that's also true is Narayana is the source of Vishnu, through whom the avatars appear. So Narayana appears to be the source of the various Vishnu forms or avatars of the Lord. And so those who are worshippers of Narayana and they accept Narayana as the supreme on the authority of these very same texts, Padma Purana, Vishnu Purana, Nrisimha Purana, Varaha Purana, they're sattvic Puranas, and on their authority Narayana is supreme, and that's their worship. And they're fine as worshippers of Narayana with worshipping Krishna and worshipping Vamana and worshipping Kurma and Matsya and Nrisimha. They're fine, as their sense scripturally is they are forms of Narayana or forms of Vishnu who appear in this world. There, so that's a Vaishnava conception on the authority of sattvic Puranas. Those of us that are in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're accepting the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. And there's a reason why we accept the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. One of those is, within the sattvic Puranas, they say, that one is the best. That one is not only the best, it's Amala Purana. Just like we know from Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 14 of Bhagavad Gita, in the modes of material nature, there's a description of how the modes of material nature are competing for supremacy. You're familiar with that section? Even when there's the mode of goodness, there's some tinge of passion and ignorance. And that tinge of passion may sometimes expand and predominate and the goodness becomes less. And then sometimes, when passion is predominant, sometimes that subsides and ignorance becomes greater. And there's always this competition. So sometimes there's great happiness. Sometimes there's frustration and anger. Sometimes there's that the modes are competing. So even when the quality of goodness is there, it's not shuddha. It's sattva, but not shuddha sattva. And shuddha sattva, where there's pure goodness, that's the spiritual world. That which is of the spiritual world is shuddha sattva. And the sattvic Puranas describe Srimad Bhagavatam as shuddha sattva. So we accept that as our authority. They say it. They're really amazing passages in Brihat Bhagavatamrita where the Puranas are having discussions, or the Upanishads are having discussions. And some say this and some say that, because they do. Some say this and some say that. And then there's some other Upanishads off to the side, not even taking part in all that argumentation, saying, you know, you're really wasting your time. This unalloyed position is really the position. You don't need all this argumentation. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam, this principal utterance of Srimad Bhagavatam is, Krishna is the absolute truth. That search for that from which everything else emanates, janmad yasya yataha, which is at the very beginning of Vedanta Sutra, that's how Srimad Bhagavatam begins. The very first words of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1. Janmad yasya yataha. Itaratash charteshu abhigyasva tene brahma hridaya adikavya muryanti yatsurayaha. Describing what it is that absolute truth that's imparted within the heart of Brahma, it's Krishna. And so this principal utterance in chapter 3 is Krishna is the absolute truth. So why such emphasis upon Krishna? Because of on the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna is the absolute truth. The other forms of the Lord, it's not like, oh, they're okay. They're expansions of Krishna. And because they're expansions of Krishna, we worship. We worship Lord Srinivasa. We worship Varaha Dev. We worship Ramchandra. We worship the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. At the same time, we're recognizing Krishna is the source of them all. It's like those of you that are from South India in particular, you'll know this to be a fact, that the Shalagram Shila can be, on any of the Lord's appearance days, you simply worship Shalagram Shila. Because in the Sri Sampradaya, Shalagram Shila is accepted as Narayan, Sakshat Narayan. You don't have to install a Shalagram Shila. It's already Narayan. And like in our New York temple, as Prabhupada instructed, there's a Shalagram Shila right before Radha Govinda. And on the appearance days of the Vishnu avatars, we bring the Shalagram Shila out for Abhishek, and in the mood of whichever is the form of the Lord, on Nrisingha Chaturdasi or Vamana Dwadasi or whatever are the appearance days of the Lord, we worship Shalagram in that mood because they are avatars of Narayan. And according to the mood, this is important, according to the mood of one's worship, the Lord receives one's worship. Still, scripturally and emotionally or devotionally, Krishna is the source of them all. There was a very nice section in Chaitanya Charitamrita when Lord Chaitanya is traveling through South India. Well, there's several of them. But one very nice one is when he visits Ranganath in Sri Rangam. And when he sees Ranganath, he's in ecstasy because he's seeing Krishna. So he's dancing in kirtan, in ecstasy, in ecstatic love of God, and the Vaishnavas in Sri Rangam have never seen that before. Brahmanas chanting mantras, they've seen before. But kirtan with dancing and ecstatic devotion and tears streaming from his eyes and his hair standing on end and trembling and ecstasy of love of God, calling out the name of the Lord very loudly and dancing. So the chief priest, upon seeing this 24-year-old sannyasi, now by that time he's just turned 25, but tall and golden complexion and very beautiful in form and ecstatic in love of God, invited him to his home to have lunch and bathed his feet and sprinkled the water and drank the water and gave to all of his family members just to honor this personality that had come to his home. And because the 4 months of the rainy season had just begun, he requested him, please stay in my home. So Lord Chaitanya did. In the course of staying in his home, they had very wonderful discussions on devotional topics of all varieties. And although Mahaprabhu was worshipping Krishna and Venkata Bhatta was worshipping Narayan, there was no, like, you know, there's no issue, no arm wrestling over, well, we're worshipping Krishna and you're worshipping, or we're worshipping Narayan and you're worshipping Krishna. There's something wrong here. There was absolute appreciation because of their quality of devotion. No, anyway, so many nice pastimes with Mahaprabhu like that. So, but they had one discussion. Had regular discussions, but one is noted where Mahaprabhu asked Venkata Bhatta, can you please explain why your goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, who is forever situated at the lotus feet of Lord Narayan, left Lord Narayan's feet to enter into the rasa dance when Krishna appeared in Vrindavan? She's the most chaste. Why did she leave her Lord, her Prabhu? And Venkata Bhatta said, there's nothing wrong. She's the goddess of fortune, and Narayan and Krishna are the same. So to go and associate with Krishna and serve him in that way when he's performing his rasa lila and being at the lotus feet of Narayan, it's the same. It's the same Lord. Narayan and Krishna are the same. Perfectly all right. Mahaprabhu said, yes, that's true. It's perfectly all right. But my question is, she's the goddess of fortune. And according to the scriptures, she underwent austerities for thousands of years. Goddess of fortune underwent austerities for thousands of years and still was not able to enter the rasa dance. Can you explain? In other words, if they're the same, then what's the problem? What's the difference? And Venkata Bhatta said, I don't know. But I think you know. Can you tell? What's that difference? A very nice explanation. He described, it's very much related to this verse, who is the emanating source of all existence. He said that in Vaikuntha, the Lord is worshipped in this mood of Aishwarya, where the opulences of Bhagavan are resplendently manifested, and everyone is worshipping him in great awe and reverence, just as Lakshmi worships Narayan, and all the residents of Vaikuntha worship Narayan. But in Vrindavan, that opulence, that Aishvarya, is also there because it's the same Narayan. But more, there is a sweetness, an intimacy that is so profound that one who has this mood of awe and reverence and seeing the opulence of the Lord, it just, they can't enter because the mood isn't the same mood. And so the only way to enter into the leelas of Krishna in Vrindavan is by getting the mercy of one of the residents of Vrindavan. They like to enter into that mood. Then one can enter. And only can one enter. Even you're the goddess of fortune. There's no question of not being pure. No question of her not being chaste to Lord Narayan. But the mood is a different mood. It's a super excellent mood. Same opulence is there, but there's this intimacy that's not available in, or not even appropriate in Vaikuntha. Mother Jasoda chasing Krishna with a stick. Who's going to chase Lord Narayan with a stick? Vaikuntha. Tried to bind him, and they can't bind Narayan, and finally he allows himself to be bound and sits at his mother's lap. Not Vaikuntha. And so on. There's an intimacy. In the Damodara Leela, there's the description that says that what the goddess of fortune who is always at the Lord's feet, she would not dream of receiving the mercy that Krishna gave to Mother Jasoda. She's worshipable by Mother Jasoda, by the goddess of fortune. And everyone's chasing after the benedictions of the goddess of fortune. Therefore, emphasis upon worship of Krishna. But worship of Krishna, one more time, cannot be fully appreciated unless one receives that understanding of who is Krishna from those that have this very confidential understanding of, or that they're associates of Krishna in Vrindavan. Not just understanding, but they've received that mercy from residents of Vrindavan, the eternal associates of Krishna. So from time to time, Krishna sends various forms, expansions, the Angsa and Divinangsa and Visheshas and Tadikatma Rupas and this ones and that ones. And there's a whole 5-6 pages of what they are. And sometimes he comes himself. And when he comes himself, it's very special because he is directly providing the opportunity for all living entities to get that association. Unqualified, qualified, come one, come all. Get the mercy. Very, very special. And for those that come, as we have come, some number of years after, 5,000 years after, those pastimes are still, they're there for us to hear about. And by hearing about them, if one hears in the proper way, one can become sufficiently purified and even enter into those pastimes just by the medium of hearing. And therefore, the importance of this verse. The whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam is to describe Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. While there's a science, and read the purport, you'll find, whoa, there's so many different categories of incarnations described there, and in this long purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, pages of different categories of incarnations, and who is the source of them all? On the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna is that source of them all. therefore we worship Krishna. The very next verse, what's Sutta Goswami going to say after he just gave the Mahavakya? What was the follow-up for that one? Text 29. Whoever carefully recites the mysterious appearances of the Lord with devotion in the morning and in the evening gets relief from all miseries of life. Well, we did it this morning and this evening, so we, so far so good today. But there's potencies as the Lord has potency, like the sun has potency. Where was I seeing this? Someone sent me this little image. This Prem Kishore sent the amount of energy that comes from the sun in 1 second is so many terawatts of power. That's more energy than the whole planet has used since its beginning. Each second, the sun is intense. But the sun is but a spark of Krishna's splendor. I mean, what's the potency of Krishna? And within the potency of Krishna, it's invested within his name, and it's invested within his form, and it's invested within the topics describing his activities. Our consciousness, it's a little bit like Kaliya Krishna. When Krishna, one of the pastimes of Krishna was the cowherd boys were moving about taking care of the cows, and it was late at night, so they camped out before returning back. And that night in the encampment, there was a huge serpent that started swallowing Nanda Maharaj. Little by little, like a python, swallowing. And the cowherd boys woke up and they saw this python. They took embers from the fire and started burning and beating and kicking, and nothing happened. He kept swallowing Nanda Maharaj. He was disappearing into the body of this huge serpent. So what did they do? Krishna! So Krishna came, smiled, and he just placed his foot on the head of that huge serpent, and at once this Gandharva form appeared from that serpent's body. He had been cursed to become a serpent, and by the touch of Krishna's lotus feet, at once he was relieved. He offered his prayers to Krishna. The boys rescued Nanda Maharaj from the body that was left over, and the Gandharva returned to his abode. But Kaliya was so, like yuga long, many yugas long, envious. So Krishna had to many, 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 many times place his lotus foot upon not just once, so many times. And still Kaliya was trying to bite him. And when he would raise one of his many hoods, he had 100 prominent out of 1,000 hoods, really big demon. And he would raise his hood and Krishna would pounce on that hood and smash it down, curbing the pride of Kaliya. After his hoods, there's a description in one of the Acharya's commentaries that the faces of Kaliya was just mangled. Although Krishna was just dancing elegantly, he's the heaviest. He was smashing the head of Kaliya. So we're a little bit like Kaliya. We're chanting Krishna's name, we're worshipping Krishna's form, we're hearing Krishna's descriptions in the scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam, delivered by a line of pure disciplic succession, and we're still like so dull. Better be with a serpent swallowing Nanda than Kaliya. Just because of this bad age, the age of Kali. And so, such a merciful feature that all the forms of the Lord are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam from the Shuddha Sattva position, and the original form of the Personality of Godhead is clearly disclosed within the pages of the Bhagavatam. And this nice verse 1:2, 1:3, 28 is this utterance. So whenever there's some other, just like in the Bhagavatam section that we're reading in the temple, one of the verses that we read this morning was merging, at least apparently. You know, so what is that merging with the Supreme? It's not. We need to understand it in terms of this Mahavakya. It's not a question of becoming Krishna or becoming equal in all senses of the terms with the Personality of Godhead. No question. But the very next verse is describing pure devotional service through the process of hearing and chanting about Him. This is the value of this wonderful Srimad Bhagavatam. For that reason, Prabhupada wanted to come and bring it as a gift to the Western world. He came across the ocean, across two oceans, just to bring this gift of Srimad Bhagavatam in the English language, in readily approachable language. Not just, you know, high scholarly, I can't figure out what he's saying kind of language. Very simple language, very approachable, very easy to understand. Still, there's some terminology, so we have the science clear. But what's Krishna's position? And what's our position in relation to Krishna? How can we enter into this very confidential activity of serving Him? It's all so nicely described in Bhagavatam, and that was Prabhupada's gift. One of His many. Very precious gift. Okay. Questions? You ready? How long is your rest? I'll just give you one, and then we'll come back. Okay?
Hare Krishna. I have two things to say.
Let's do one.
First one is the appreciation. I would like to submit my appreciation and thanks for the reasons that I could able to understand properly Krishna's expansion. Yeah. Since it started with the first class of Bhagavatam. So, like, why we consider Krishna as the Supreme Lord and the other Sampradaya consider Narayana as their Supreme Lord.
Yeah.
So, you gave a nice explanation, like, what that understanding and what our understanding.
Yeah.
And I could able to understand perfectly in a proper way. And also, why we considering Srimad Bhagavatam as our authority, and
yeah,
why they consider their Vishnu Purana and Padma Purana. And today you give a nice explanation, like, it's because Srimad Bhagavatam is the Suddha Sadhva,
yeah,
because all other Sadhva books refers to us. I was able to understand properly, and I was
okay,
so happy to get that
okay,
nice explanation, Maharaj. Thank you so much. My second question is, since Srimad Bhagavatam is a summary of the Vedanta Sutra.
It's a commentary,
yes,
it's a natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra.
So this sloka, text 28, which says Krishna is the Swayam Bhagavan, which should be from the Vedanta Sutra, right?
No. It's explaining Vedanta Sutra. Because the second aphorism of Vedanta Sutra is Janmad Yasya Yataha. So the absolute truth is that from which everything comes. So this is now a declaration. Krishna is that absolute truth from which everything comes. It's an expansion or a commentary upon that statement.
So I was just wondering if this is the sloka comes from, you know, from the Vedanta Sutra, because it should be a constant thing, it never changes. Sloka, maybe the interpretation.
You're saying the same thing, and I'll say the same thing. It doesn't come from Vedanta Sutra.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
It's
not. It's a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. It's explaining that statement. That's what commentary does. And that's what Srimad Bhagavatam is. Vyas knows what Vedanta Sutra is. He's the compiler of it. Vedanta Krit, Vedavit. So he can explain it. And he does. And that explanation is this. In Vedanta Sutra, there's many saha, there's pronouns. That. Or he. So it's not, you know, there's no name. Here's the name. And why? And what authority? Who is that, or what is that, from which everything else comes? A companion of this one is in the second chapter of the first canto, where it describes Vedanta Tat. Tattva vidvas, tattvam yajjnanam advayam, brahmeti, paramatmeti, bhagavaniti, shabdyate. In that statement, the absolute truth, the learned Vedantists say that the absolute truth, which is of the same advaya nature, non-dual nature, so dvaita and advaita, or dvaya and advaya, advaya tattva, of the non-dual substance, has three different categories: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Bhagavan is as non-dual as Brahman is non-dual, is as non-dual as Paramatma. That's the utterance of the Bhagavatam. So some may place emphasis here, or there, or there, but they're all non-dual. And of those three, one is the source of the other. Or the in the language of Bhagavad Gita, the last verse of chapter 14, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham. Aham. It's Krishna's first person singular. It's a person. He as a person is the Pratishta of Brahman. Like the rays of the sun have as their pratishta the sun. You don't find rays zooming around somewhere without a sun or source of light, source of emanation. So Krishna is that source of emanation. Existentially, the basis of Brahman is Krishna. But they're of the same non-dual nature. So, you're to repeat your question back to you, so you heard, you know that I heard you. This statement should find its place in Vedanta Sutra. That's what you said twice. No, it's a commentary, an explanation of a very terse sutra-like statement. What does that terse sutra mean? This is what it means.
Does every principal scripture have a Mahavakya?
Well, for example, in Bhagavad Gita, For example, in Bhagavad Gita, it's a dialogue. It's part of Mahabharata. It's one portion, and so then in that portion, there's a dialogue, and it starts with Arjuna being an illusion, and gradually Krishna pulls him out of illusion. So the type of text it is different. Ramayana has that verse that Valmiki uttered when he saw the hunter kill the bird. And he spoke something that the message was there, but also the meter and the rhythm was there. So, um, a major part. I haven't heard our acharyas say that's the Mahavakya of Ramayana, but it sets the standard for the whole rest of Ramayana. That is the necessity of acting by religious and moral conduct, and certainly that's the theme of Ramayana. But you know, it doesn't specifically describe Ram as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but it does certainly give indication of the necessity of theistic conduct. So, generally but not always. It's a classic part of a text, but not always, as far as I understand. Anything over here? Yes.
Why do the other two types of Puranas mislead the readers, saying Shiva is supreme and Brahma is supreme?
This is the I'll repeat the question, so make sure I got it right. Why are other Puranas sometimes emphasizing Brahma as supreme or Shiva as supreme? According to Jiva Goswami, there are, and this is taken from the scriptures, there are 18 principal Puranas. They're called Mahapuranas. And then there's so many Puranas, and then there's Upapuranas. So those 18 principal Puranas are divided into 6, 6, and 6, or into thirds, according to the quality of Laguna. So persons who are principally influenced by the quality of goodness, there are Puranas to help elevate them. Those are principally influenced by the mode of passion, there are 6 Puranas to elevate them. And similarly, Tamagun. So the Guna avatars are principally glorified in those 6, 6, and 6. So that persons of that, primarily influenced by that particular mode, can become elevated. And in a very natural and, you know, like, easy for them to do method. But mixed within those, the other 6 and 6, there are statements that are very clearly the quality of goodness, or very clearly indicating the supremacy of Vishnu. But it's not the predominant message, whereas in the Sattvic Puranas, it's the predominant message. So it's meant to, the purpose is to gradually lead persons that are influenced by lower modes to higher mode, to the mode of goodness, to transcendence. It's designed that way. Because if there was only one option, the mode of goodness option, those influenced by passion and ignorance are, you know, they're not going to participate, because that's not my mode, it's not my thing, it does not carry me. That's the answer I just gave you is a very similar answer to why there are so many religions, because there's so many, the modes of nature are so diverse. So what is that religion or teaching or dharma that's Sanatana Dharma?
Is it not like misleading the readers?
No. No. Wait till you have children, you're trying to discipline your child. And, you know, they want to do something. And you're saying, no, wait. God is benevolent. He understands. It's not misleading. You know, if there's only one thing, and that's surrender unto me. And if you don't do any, if you do anything else, you're finished. Try that with your child. Don't try that with your child. what Narada says, instead of misleading, what Narada says is, if there's too much emphasis or insufficient emphasis, too much emphasis on the other and insufficient emphasis upon who is supreme, then it will encourage the material tendency instead of elevate that material tendency. So when you're trying to, when you're a father and you're taking care of a child and you're learning how to discipline, the you know, why the right thing should be done instead of, you know, what somebody, what your child may want to do. I'm just giving that example because it's very meaningful. We're children of God, and we're rebellious. We're, you know, the mischievous child, running around doing mischievous things. And the, you know, if the master, our father, says stop that mischief, the mischievous child isn't going to stop mischief because someone says stop that mischief. They'll do more mischief. Some children. That's all they need to hear is don't. And that's the thing they're focused on. So there's not only one message. If you can't do this, do that. If you can't do that, do so, because of benevolence, not out of misleading. The message, just like Bhagavad Gita, what to speak of the Puranas, look at Bhagavad Gita. The message is so clear, and how many different meanings people get out of Bhagavad Gita. Sarvadharmam Parityaja, Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja, commentary, don't surrender to Krishna. Explicitly, boldly. Manmana, don't think of Krishna. Serious. Think of da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Why? That's misleading. Not Krishna's misleading. He knows the mentality of his children. He's giving them the real thing, but he's also giving them, if they won't take the real thing, something that will elevate and purify them, that they can accept willfully, gradual elevation instead of direct. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a nice class. I have a small question. So, is there any description about the functions of the second quadruple expansion?
Yes. It's mentioned so briefly that I can't remember the detail, but they have functions of being they're the predominating deity of the intelligence, of the mind, of the senses, and of false ego. I can't remember which one. So they're, if worshipped properly, they will purify each of those, but then one can simply worship the source of them. And so along with when Krishna creates, he provides the means for that which he creates to be properly utilized and be spiritualized and be fully restored to the spiritual condition. Of course, most people don't look at the operator's manual. They just play with the human form of life and, you know, become a sense gratification instrument. But when it's used properly, then there's a presiding deity, a lord, that if when recognized can elevate one. Or one may not want to do that, but then, you know, some devata, that, you know, I apply this faculty of human existence and I get, you know, some elevation into the quality of goodness. Those who worship Yanti Deva Vata Devan, those who worship the Devas, they attain that more motive goodness realm, but it brings one to the quality of goodness, but someone can just totally ignore that authority and they degrade themselves. But so they're meant to elevate the Chatur Vyuha. They have functions that they serve the Lord. They're called, Prabhupada uses this British term, aides de camp, which I don't know exactly what it means, but you can intuitively appreciate it. They're assisting, there's like the king, and they're aides de camp. They're persons that are directly assisting the king in his affairs of state. So their mood is serving the Lord in Vaikuntha. Very confidential expansions of himself to assist him in his, and that's their mood, carrying out various functions. Yes.
Something that you had sent a beautiful explanation for this Krishna's to Bhagavan, so in that phrase referring to Adi Leela 243 to 269, something like that, like arguing back and forth.
Yes.
Krishna's subject.
Yeah, did you read those verses?
Yeah, that was beautiful. That you sent that reference to us, something like that.
Okay. Just to fill the rest of you in, there's a dialogue after Lord Brahma steals the calves and the cowherd boys, puts them in a cave, and comes back to the scene of the crime to see what Krishna's going to do. And he sees the calves and the cowherd boys. Then he goes back to the cave and sees the calves and the cowherd boys. Then he goes back to by the bank of the Jamuna and he sees the calves and the cowherd boys, and then all of a sudden he sees forms of Narayan, each of the calves and each of the cowherd boys, and etc., etc. And so then they disappear and there's just Krishna standing underneath a tree looking with unblinking eyes at Lord Brahma as a little boy with a lump of yogurt and fruit in his hand. So Brahma starts offering prayers and says, "You are Narayan." And Krishna responds saying, "Brahma, what are you talking about, Narayan? I'm just a little boy. Narayan is the source of everything." "Oh yes, you are Narayan. I'll prove it. I'll give you three explanations why you are the original source of everything." And he gives the detail, "For this reason, that reason, and that reason, I proved it. You are Narayan. And I offer you my obeisances and profuse apologies." How to understand? So it's a detailed explanation based upon scripture of how to understand Krishna is the source of everything. Krishna and Narayan are the same, and Krishna is the source of everything. You have something?
Maharaj, you said, thank you. You said that something about you can enter into appreciating the worship of the Lord by perfect hearing, and we've also heard sometimes that by once saying the holy name perfectly, you can be liberated. Is it just a matter of time between that moment and ultimate purification? Or will there always be that chance of free will letting one slip back?
Well, you said several things that I would like to clarify or edit a little bit. One is that by once uttering the pure holy name, one can be liberated. Even according to the Ajamila story of the sixth canto and Haridas Thakur, even Namabhas can achieve that. And that's what we're doing, Namabhas. Reflection of the holy name as opposed to, but Shuddha Nam fully awakens love of God, and that's the regaining our position with Krishna in the spiritual world. It's beyond achieving liberation. Love of God is beyond liberation. And in the stage of liberation or perfection of spiritual life, it's not that at that stage free will is zero. Free will is at its maximum. And is properly utilized. It's not that we get a lobotomy before going to the spiritual world. And, you know, our capacity to think is taken away so that we can just be saying yes men. It's fully operative free will. Fully operative. And it's so tuned in with Krishna's desire that, like Mother Jasoda, her everything is just whatever Krishna wants. Even if it's chasing Krishna with a stick. So free will is fully operative in the liberated position. Prabhupada explains that in a relationship between father and son, the father is always supplying something for the son. The son says, Daddy, can I have this? Daddy, can I have that? Daddy, can I have this? Daddy, can I have that? And so the father's busy taking care of this and that the son's demanding. So it's a whole other thing when there's someone coming to that same individual saying, would you like this? Would you like that? Would you like this? Would you like that? So Krishna likes, even more than the reverential worship of God the Father, where he's the son and he's looked after by a father and mother. And to the extent where they chastise him, he likes. So he does naughty things, so they will chastise him. Out of love. So he can have that exchange of love, because from Mother Jasoda's side, she's not in the mood of controlling my son. It's just love. In the perfect form of love of mother. Free will is fully operative. And at the slightest indication, what Krishna wants is what we want. Just by the force of internal potency. Goddess of Fortune. She wanted to. She wasn't allowed to.
My question is, when someone worships Vishnu, will they not be able to enter the spiritual world?
The entering the spiritual world is different than entering rasa dance. The answer to your question is yes. But if you add, and also rasa dance, it's no. Or not just rasa dance, it's, you know, become a cowherd boy. It's no. Or become a cow. Or a tree. In Vrindavan. No. Because of that intimacy that's available to those who have the mercy of those who have that quality of love. For Krishna. They can give that. Is that alright?
What is entering the spiritual world? What is entering the spiritual world?
Well, there's different categories. There's five kinds of liberation. One entering is merging, sayuja. The other four are attaining a form, sarupya mukti. or opulences like the Lord, samipya, or intimate association with the Lord. Look, entering into the spiritual world means leaving behind, you know, that the negative is leaving behind the modes of nature and the forces of karma and material body and false ego and all categories of contamination, and manifesting spiritual form, svarup, and in spiritual form, engaging in activity in relation to the Lord, in service in relation to the Lord. And there are different moods of that service. You know, broad categories are Vaikuntha mood, or Goloka mood. And then there are rasas. There are subdivisions of those moods. There's variegatedness of love in the spiritual world. But entering into that, the fullness of one's loving relationship with the Lord, is what it means to enter the spiritual world. Is that all right?
One question.
Okay.
When one respects Vishnu with awe and reverence and have a certain inclination towards offering prayers to Vishnu, how does that...
What's the punchline of your question?
I myself develop a very strong inclination to Vishnu Sahasranam. So I was just wondering,
what are you wondering?
About how is it right about
him? It's right. It's absolutely right. And with that absolutely right is a certain mood. Here's a nice example from the same Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's discussion with Venkatabhata. Through the association of Lord Chaitanya, Venkatabhata understood. But he's the chief priest of Ranganath, so he stayed. But his brother, after some time, Prabodh Ananda Saraswati, he went to Vrindavan. And he lived by the Kali Yuga. You can go and visit his place. And he completely accepted. He didn't reject what his brother was doing. He fully embraced the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and became very deep in his love for Krishna. And Venkatabhata's son, Gopal, same. He became Gopal Bhatta Goswami. But it's not like... So it depends. It's not... You know, this is good and that's bad. They're both good. They're both transcendentally good. But the mood is different. And the mood of intimacy is particularly appreciated by those who have that association with one who has that mood of intimacy, of love in Vrindavan, as Mahaprabhu had and gave. Very beautiful pastimes with Murari Gupta, who was a young school-age friend, Brahmana boy, friend of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was a Ram Bhakta. This wonderful lila where Mahaprabhu was encouraging him to become a Krishna Bhakta. Because he had such love for Mahaprabhu, he tried. He tried, but he couldn't. He couldn't sleep. He was ready to give up his life because he couldn't follow the order of Mahaprabhu to become Krishna Bhakta. And Mahaprabhu just embraced him and said, I was just testing to show the world how much love and deep affection you have for Ram. This is wonderful. This is true bhakti. Etc. So, I mean, I'm shortened to a nice long leela, but it's absolutely fine. But the outcome is not entrance into Krishna's pastimes. Unless one is in this very, very unique position, fortunate position, as Murari Gupta was, to have Mahaprabhu's association, or an intimate follower of Mahaprabhu in their association. I'm just going to see if others have some questions. Hang on. Anyone else? Yes.
There is, I'm not sure whether I understood correctly, there is a mentioning in one of the chapters that says, want to get material opulences, say, name, pray to this God, fame. It's mentioned for fame, personality of God, supreme person.
That's one of his opulences, yes. That's what you're saying?
I mean, I thought that's one of the material opulences.
But the material opulences are but reflections of the spiritual opulence. The Lord possesses everything in fullness. He's Bhagavan. That's what Bhagavan means. So, those opulences are fully spiritual, and they're manifest in a reflected feature in this realm. Someone's wealthy, someone's beautiful, someone's famous, someone's knowledge, someone has renunciation, someone has strength. Those are just reflections. And one of the things that having opulences in this world often, not always, but often does, is one becomes attached to those opulences and forgets where that opulence came from. Like, you know, who is Bhagavan? They try to become the enjoyer of that opulence. It's part of the feature of this prison house. Someone tries to get out of the prison house by becoming a virtuous person. And they, by that virtue, they get some opulence, and then they become enamored by their opulence and forget Bhagavan. So that's the problem. But if there is opulence that's properly utilized in the spirit of detachment, like we were discussing this morning, Maharaj Ambarish, he fixed his mind completely upon the Lord. He fixed his sense of seeing and walking and all of his senses in service of the Lord. He had such opulence. It rivaled the opulence of the heavenly planets, and he didn't care for it one bit. But he used it in his position as a king to serve his subjects and serve the Lord. So fame is not bad if it's used properly. But generally, fame or any other opulence will intoxicate a person. That's what Nala Kuvera and Mani Griva. Oh, our father is so famous. We're the sons of Kuvera, and he's the treasurer of heaven. They became proud. So they became degraded in that condition of pride. One need not do that like that. A very wonderful contemporary example is Ambarish Prabhu, the grandson of Henry Ford. He is so unpretentious, it's amazing. He's so humble, like not like superficial humble, he's very deep personality. I really respect him. Being in my service as chairman, I've had to interact with him more and more, and he's an amazing Vaishnava. His realizations are very deep. But, you know, wherever he goes, he's famous. And he knows it. He knows how that can be used to help establish Prabhupada's teachings. You know, he doesn't like being in the limelight like that. But he wants to establish appreciation of people for Prabhupada and his teachings. So, to some extent, he does that. But it's not out of, you know, flaunting his fame. But generally, somebody does a little nicely at something, they become all filled with themselves about that something. Is that okay? Okay. You get the last question.
Yes,
first and last. There you go.
Thank you, Maharaj. My understanding is Vyasa Dev or Shri Badri Narayana is a form of Krishna, Maharaj.
He worships this is my understanding. He worships Narayan in Badri, and therefore Badri Narayan. But it's not a specific form, it's Narayan as he resides in Badri. So Narayan, we were discussing Narayan. Yes?
So I was wondering why he didn't choose to worship in the form of Krishna, because
he liked the form of Narayana. like Mahavishnu, when he took away the sons of the Brahmana and Dwaraka, each for 10 sons, he kidnapped them. He didn't kill them, he just like, they disappeared. They just, where'd they go? You know, that whole Leela. So Arjuna and Krishna went to Mahavishnu. And first they went to Arjuna had already gone to Yamaraj, and he didn't have. So he went to Mahavishnu, and he had. Because he just wanted to see Krishna. But he recognized you will remain as Naranarayan. So it's let me ask you this. Why did Gopal Bhatta worship Shalagram Shilas? After having Lord Chaitanya's association and knowing Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because when he was worshipping the Shalagram Shilas, he understood this is Krishna. So much so that one of those Shalagram Shilas manifested a deity form of Krishna. Self-manifesting Krishna. So what was Vyasadeva understanding? You'd have to ask Vyasadeva, but you know, he understood Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one of his expansions, Naranarayan Rishi, is residing here in Badrinath, which is where he was residing. So he's worshipping that form of Krishna.
In the yesterday class presentation.
Go on. It's laughing because it was the last one. It's okay.
So it says, like, before reading Bhagavatam, so we have to remember the Lord and the Vyasadeva, Naranarayana Rishi, and yes. Saraswati also.
Yeah. So. Not the Saraswati that people worship that when they want to pass the exam in school. Not that one. She's an expansion of the original. Different. In Sri Brahma Samhita, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, following the commentary of Jiva Goswami, explains this. Not just the goddess Saraswati, the goddess of learning, but each of those devatas, they have their, he uses the word prototype. You know what prototype means? Like, you know, if someone wants to get a patent, they have to bring in a prototype and then they patent it and then they can make others like it. So the original of each of the devatas exists in the spiritual world. They don't have the function of maintaining universal affairs because there's no universe to maintain. They're just serving the Lord. And their expansions do different things. Same. You know, the I can't refer to some specific statement from scripture or our acharyas other than the principle, that is, Vyasadeva is not inviting us to worship the goddess of learning in the worldly sense, but in the prototype sense and of the spiritual realm. You know, the internal potency of the Lord manifest as that capacity for us to understand. We're inviting, invoking her mercy so that we can properly understand through the agency of the internal potency, the medium of service, that knowledge-giving energy of the Lord personified. That one we're offering her respectful obeisances unto. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada Swami Maharaj ki jai.